was my anonymity. God dang it. Holy God, somebody is going to know I drank. Jeez. My name is Jim White and I'm an alcoholic. Can you hear me back there? All right, if you can't, it's cooler up front if you're still got a little new sweat. Come up here and let it relax a little bit. Like I said, my name is Jim White and I'm an alcoholic. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship. All you people that have these high-tech items, look up the definition of fellowship on your way while you're waiting for the red light. I came into Alcoholics Anonymous the way I don't want anybody here or your kids, your aunts or uncles come in. I came into Alcoholics Anonymous through some weird situations. One, I drank too much. Two, I didn't know any funny words. And those funny words were sobriety. What the hell was sobriety? Did anybody walk into a bar and say, hey, give me a six pack of sobriety to go? I never did. I never saw it there. I saw in the men's room, you want to call this number here first. But none of that sobriety. Sobriety, serenity, holy mackerel. Those were far-fetched. I'm going to give a little quick one. I drank my way out of high school. I went on a drunk for about a good year. And I was probably 19 years old then. And then that terrible word came into my life. When you gonna get a job? Oh, Jesus, cricket. Ah, hey man, I'm having enough trouble stealing money to buy drinks. I can't afford to take time off to go to work, you know? And that's what it was. I went in the military. Did anybody here ever have alcoholic luck? You know that. Boy, I'm glad I got away with that. Boy, I'm glad I didn't get nailed for that. Boy, am I glad I didn't get nailed for this. Well, I had alcoholic luck. And I also had my first taste of a personal inventory. Now, don't let that word in 12 steps scare you, personal inventory. Because you took it 100 times. I did. Most alcoholics did. You know? Oh boy, what did I do last night? Oh boy, what did I do yesterday? Oh boy, what, you know, where did I park the car? Oh boy, you know? Oh, what do you mean the gas bill? What do you mean that funny thing, the electric bill? You know? We forgot about all those things. But I came in, I was what I had learned after I got here. The power of example. If you keep drinking, you're gonna wind up like him. You keep drinking, you're gonna wind up like her. Yeah. And that's the way it was with me. I had a job that allowed me to drink because I went to school with the boss's son, the owner's son, and we drank together. So that gave you, that gave you permission to stop and drink. I drank my way out of the army. I was doing real good in the military. And they sent this alky to Germany. Oh boy, how many different, we were just kidding on the way out. These new beer places they got 52 brands of beer. Holy crepes, I wouldn't know where the hell to start when I walked in there. You know, I'd just say, give me a beer. I didn't know names. But I drank my way out of the army. I had a good record going in that there. And by the time I was ready to rotate back to the States, I was unfit for reenlistment. I don't know what that meant, but it's a polite way of saying, take the papers and the money and go. Well, I got out of the military, and lo and behold, I needed a vacation, I needed a rest. I mean, I protected all these people back there in the 1950s, you know. I mean, I'm over there, you know, boy, I'm soldiering in that there, and the Lebanon deal, and so I needed a rest. So I started stopping at the bars and that there. I had a little money. I worked a scam with a partner of mine from up in Cleveland, and accumulated a little bit of cash. And I'm in the club drinking up a storm and that there. And a guy says, hey, he says, you know, you're eligible for unemployment. Boy, that unemployment, boy, that rang a bell. I knew what that meant. That meant you didn't know work. So I went down to the old next day, right down to the unemployment office. And that took me on another good, almost a 9-month drunk. And at that time there, for you young people and some of the old timers, remember, at that time there, top dollar was $35 a week. That was the top you could get in unemployment. And this is the part I like with my sons and my grandsons and my son's friends. I sit back and say, well, I drank beer at 15 cents a glass, and the glass was that high, you know. And they have shots were at that time there were 25 cents, and if you got a draft with it, it was 30 cents, you know. And these kids, they can't fathom that a beer being, you know, less than $3 a bottle, you know, or whatever it is today. So I drank my way through that. In the meantime, I got this unemployment office sent me to this place for a job. Oh boy. So I went down there and interviewed and all that there. And the guy says, well, he says, you look all right. He says, come on in tomorrow morning, 9:00. Now, I don't know whether any of you have heard this phrase before, and I hope you have. Alcoholics Anonymous will spoil your drinking. And that's a fact. I go to work this day with this guy here. It's strong mind, strong back, weak mind. And I go to work. And all we were required was work 4 hours a day. Then they could send you home if there was no work. So I went the first day, the second day, the fifth day, the eighth day, the ninth day. And finally I said to the guy that I was working with, I says, where's this guy? When's this guy coming back that I took his place for? And the guy says, oh, wow, he says, he was an Alcoholics Anonymous and he went back drinking. He's down in North Warren State Hospital. And Alcoholics Anonymous will spoil your drinking. Because this work, these 4 hours, there was somebody sitting on my bar stool at 11:00 in the morning at Ray Strobe's on 26th and between Cochrane and, or between Myrtle and Chestnut. The bar there at 11:30 in the morning. There was somebody sitting in my seat over at St. Joe's Club at 3:30 in the afternoon. I mean, this guy's got to get back here and I got to get out of this job. Because, man, it's spoiling my drinking time. I mean, it was unbelievable. Well, things went along fine and that there, and I got my way out of that job there and went to work for fella that went to school with and that knew, and his father and that. And that started it. Got married, had a son, but this one's the real roller coaster. Got to the point to where my drinking was that I'd get done work at 11th and Parade, go over to Friday's across the street, have a few beers, grab a six-pack of Ginny, And by the time I got to 8th and Weschler, 10th and Weschler and that there, I was out of beer. So that meant I had to swing down to 8th Street over to Green Garden Tavern and get some more because I got to drive all the way to 38th Street. And I mean, that's a dry ride. Well, on this job, kept drinking and that there, the marital situations were getting a little rough and ready and that there. Didn't give a care less about too much of anything. And I met two of the worst people you want to meet in the world. This one guy named Lenny. He worked at this warehouse where I had to work at. And I'd walk in there, and he'd look at me and go, "Oh, Jimmy, you look great. Boy, you know what? You look so good. I'm going to take my wife out for supper tonight." I don't want to hear that, you know. And every day I'd go in there and he'd do that same route. "Oh, I'm going to do something. Boy, you made my whole day today. Nothing can go wrong in this day today, boy. You just look good." Well, worst comes the worst is I got to leave that warehouse and I got to go to another warehouse. And lo and behold, I back the truck up in that there and hit the dock in that there and I'll hear, "Hey, Red, that's close enough. You can't move the building back any further, you know." And I'd get up and I'd walk up there and this little guy, Bobby, he'd look at me and he'd say, "Oh, hey, Jim, boy, why, you're looking good today. Why, you smell a little ripe, but you're all right. You know, you're looking good, you know." He says, "Boys, I'm going to enjoy taking my kids to their wrestling matches tonight, you know." And then, same thing, next time I'd see him, he'd give me one of those, "Oh, boy, you know, you're looking good. Boy, boy, you made my day today. Boy, you're great, you know." Boy, well, I didn't know who these two, you know, I knew Bob and Lenny as far as the job was concerned. But Lenny used to give me these little diggy things, you know. You know, he says, "Boy," he says, "boy, was you and the boss drinking last night?" And I says, "Yeah, I stopped. We stopped over at Friday's and then we went up to Casey's on Parade Street for a couple of nights." He says, "Boy," he says, "you're sure making my life great." Oh, boy. Well, I think you get the picture of who these two clowns were. These two clowns were using me, and they got together, and they said, "That apple's getting rotter and rotter. One of these days it's going to fall, and we're going to get them." Hey, you know, well, it happened, you know. I walked in there one day in Lenny's office sat there, and I says, "Well, Lenny," I says, "I quit drinking." And Lenny looked at me and he says, "Who moved out, you or her?" Holy cow, what do you mean? You know, what? You don't know my wife, you don't know him. But the apple was getting rotter and rotter. It was getting ready to fall. He says, "Well," he says, "that's a good idea." He says, "What are you going to do now that you're going to quit drinking?" And to the new man, Scott, this is the important part of the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. We all know how to quit drinking. Our problem is our thinking to keep us from starting over. It's not the quitting, it's the starting. It's the letting the little things bug you that's going to start you. Well, I'm going along and out there, and Lenny's giving me these things that drive you nuts. That's how I got that bump up there. Lenny. He'd say, "You know," he says, "stay dry, you got to stay in dry places." I said, why? Let's see. There's the state of Utah, I ain't moving there. there's Hardin County in Kentucky, and I know that's a dry county, so I ain't moving there. Well, I didn't know any dry places, you know. I didn't, never, what the hell, why should I think about dry places? I'm drinking. Well, then he'd come up with one of these other ones. If you want to stay sober, you got to stay with sober people. Another one. What the hell? Who? I don't know anybody sober. I knew people that drank funny. I got a brother who used to walk up in the club, come up, sit right next to me and order a Paul Jones and 7-Up, pay for it, go over and sign the book for the money, and leave. I saw some people who used to come in there and they used to have maybe two or three drinks. And then they would leave. Man, I had what you will find in Alcoholics Anonymous, a chemical reaction to alcohol. It's when I sat down on that bar stool, took that first drink, the chemical reaction between the cheeks of my butt and the leather on the bar stool stuck together. Man, that was it, man. That was your new super glue, your new monkey glue. Hell, I had it a bunch of years ago, you know, and it was that simple. I mean, once you sit there and start drinking, there was only one reason I had to stop drinking. It was I ran out of money. That was the only one. And that was it used to be a hard stone to swallow, you know, running out of money. Oh boy, let's see. As Johnny and I were sitting down in the Italian bar down on 4th Street, 5th, 3rd Street. I can't even think of the name of the bar, it's been so long. We come down and I knew I had I knew I had 10, 15 bucks on me when we went in there. But between the two of us, we had 30 cents. And that was enough for two more glasses of draft beer. And we said, well, this is the end, you know. And when we walked out of there, we were both broke. And that was the only reason we left. I mean, we were broke. So Lenny kept Nick. He says, what are you going to do now that you quit drinking? I said, oh, I don't know. Yeah. He says, you know, you got your son, you can make model airplanes, you know, take up a sport or something like that. Hey, man, that ain't for me. I don't cut that. I'm not a model airplane builder or anything like that. But that was one of those things. What are you going to do now that you quit drinking? Well, a funny thing happened. I start taking baths. And I tell you what, it hurt. You talk about hard water. I mean, I know hard water. But if you ever want to try this experiment, go home tonight, picture the level of the bathtub, turn the hot and cold water on, let the water raise up to the level you want, and then realize how many good Kohler Pilsner beers could you drink while that water was filling up that tub? What a waste of time, you know? And that's what it was. I'd rather be drinking than sitting in a bathtub, you know? Hell, I might drown, I don't know. But Lenny come up with some more. Well, I was complaining and moaning and groaning and that there and this and that. And that other new funny word that people throw around at me at that time was self-pity. I didn't know nothing about self-pity. He says, Jim, Jesus, geez, many crickets. I'll tell you what, he says, geez. He says, you go up here to the railroad tracks. You wait for a freight train to come down. He says, you jump out in front of it. He says, when that train comes, gets done going by you, you come back here you pull yourself together and come back here and tell me the first drink did all the trouble. Well, after the caboose went by, I mean, hell, you know, it was over with once you take that first drink. And it worked that way. Well, I set up a program of staying sober by myself. Now, I don't recommend this to anybody, to go out and try to stay sober by yourself, especially if you have little problems like marital, job, you know, certain things and that. So I set up Monday night and watched a movie on TV. Tuesday night, oh, well, look, Lenny, I talked to a guy and I told him, I'm going to get my high school diploma. And he said, well, what do you have to do? I said, well, what do you have to do? He said, well, Tuesdays and Thursday nights, you go to night school. Big mouth, tell Lenny, hey, Lenny, well, I'm going to go to night school on Tuesdays and Thursdays. He said, oh, yeah. He said, what does that mean? Well, from 7 o'clock to 10 o'clock. He said, hey, he says, that's great. He says, they don't sell beer in schools. Oh, you remember that dumb statement I said earlier? Stay dry, stay in dry places. That's what he meant. Couldn't get a drink though. You know, don't go into the, if you got a hay fever, you don't run around in goldenrod. And that's what it was. So they worked on me. And they kept giving me these little stupid things that today, the shoe fits, you wear it. I wore it. I had to wear the shoe. Well, my way of staying sober by myself came to a rushing end. Saturday night, there was no football game in the stadium, no football game in the county. And so I said, well, this is the most important part of my life. There's a football game on television tonight. It's a colored television game. Well, in the 50s, where were most of the colored television sets? They're all in the barn, you know? What the hell? So I said, well, I'll watch the game on TV. But my brother John has colored TV. I can go to his house and watch it. Well, now, I haven't had a drink in about 3 months. And Lenny had told me, if you take a drink after a while, it's going to be worse. So I haven't had this drink, so I'm sitting at my brother's house, and he says, you want a beer? And I said, oh, no, no, no. I said, you know, I quit drinking. And he said, look, he says, did quitting drinking solve any of your problems? Boy, there I am. You know, still in the same mess I was 3 months ago, 4 months ago, you know. And then, now I'll have one. Well, I had that one beer. Stroh's Bohemian Fire Brewed Beer. And they were the only beer bottle in town that was 16 ounces that you could buy at a drink. And baby, did it go. Now, I can remember sitting there, and all I can tell you about the football game was the Baltimore Colts was one of the teams. That's the only thing I can tell you about the football. That's the only thing I can tell you about the football game. So, bing, bang, Brady, boy, the game's all right. Well, here comes old self-pity. He's on this side. Remorse, he's on this side. I'll get to him later. But I go and I get on the phone with my wife at the time. And I tell her how great I am. You know, I quit drinking and I'm drunker than hell. Oh, I quit drinking and all this and that there. And my sister picks the phone up upstairs and that there, and I raise hell in the house and that there. And I says, the hell with it. Nobody cares. So I hopped in the car, come off the avenue, went down 26th and State, down State Street heading for the public dock. Now, in the old days, you remember the public dock, you could drive all the way around, but it was all open. And I was on my way to the public dock to commit suicide, because I figured, what the hell? Nobody cared, nothing about it. Next thing I remembered, I was in a phone booth, and I was talking to a Catholic priest. And being Catholic, I proceeded to tell him what I thought about the canon law and this and that, and the whole, you know, and because I didn't have to care what I said to him, because I was going to commit suicide. I was on my way to the public dock, but I'm in a phone booth, I don't know where. And lo and behold, all of a sudden, this voice comes over the phone. Now, don't tell me, could it be Gabriel, or could it be Gabriel? You know, could it be a man, or could it be a woman? Tonight it was a woman. And she said, "I'm sorry, sir, but your time is up." Okay, now what are you gonna do, you know? Now what are you gonna do? Well, the priest, he immediately tells the operator, "This is suicidal, call Trace and find out where he's at and out there, and get the police there." Next thing I remembered, anybody here remember the squelching sound of a police car radio? Well, I'm in this phone booth, and all of a sudden I hear this, and I hear a guy say, "Well, we located him. He's in the phone booth." They had to push the door and jam the door to get me out. The cop pulled me out of the booth, and he had to pry one finger at a time off the receiver. They laid me down on the ground. I remember laying there, and I was trying to do something that you've all done all day long and never even gave it a second thought. I was trying to open my eyes. I can remember throwing my head back, figuring the eyelids would open up, you know? I can remember that. Well, the next weird thing is the paddy wagon came. You have to talk, the young people have to, the old timers explain a paddy wagon. The paddy wagon came and they opened up the door and they picked me up. If I'm lying, I'm dying. They slid me in the back of the paddy wagon. They closed the door and they locked the door. And the minute that door was locked, I came out of it. The first thing in a good Alky's mind was, "I gotta get out of here. This guy's taking me to jail." So what does the good Alky do? He goes all the way to the back right behind the driver and starts, and I run like hell and bam, I slam into that back door. That door's locked. It's made of steel. Bam, bam, I fall on the floor. Stops the vehicle and the guy slides the thing open and says, "Hey, aren't you Danny White's brother?" Holy Christ, somebody knows me. Oh my gosh, what am I gonna do now? Well, alcoholic luck stepped in through a job situation and that there and some wheeling deal. I knew a lot of guys on the police department, so they put me way down. This is in the new jail, way down in the back. And they let me have my cigarettes and my lighter and that. And this kid come in and he says, "Hey, what the hell are you trying to do?" And the famous saying, Todd, is, I don't know, I didn't know. Well, dummy me, get out of jail Sunday morning, go to work Monday, and walk right smack into Lenny. And the first thing he said to me, "How was your weekend?" I goes, So I proceeded to tell him, he says, always remember this one thing. When you quit drinking, it's serious business. When you go back drinking, It doesn't start where you left off. It started where you started to leave off before. And it's worse. Couldn't deny that. So that's how I, my kindergarten classes of Alcoholics Anonymous was Lenny and Bobby. I was their power of example. And this is where I have to always remember gratitude. Now, my first AA meeting, I don't know what the hell happened. It was a Friday. It was December 23rd. I asked Lenny, I said, where is the AA meeting at? And he says, Jimmy, he says, there's a meeting Monday night at St. Vincent's Hospital in the employees' cafeteria off the emergency room. But if you have a chance to be with your wife and son and that, you know, take that. Well, this is now, we're talking 23rd, 24th, 25th, Christmas Day, then the 26th. Well, I knuckled it, white knuckled it the whole weekend. I ate chocolate, I ate peanut butter sandwiches and crackers and that, you know. But I had a little thing back here saying, hey, Jim, in the middle cabinet, cupboard on the bottom there, is where the whiskey's at. Is where my sister and brother, they kept the booze. So that weekend, I'd be out there and I'd be like getting a bowl of cereal, shaking it, and I'd be, maybe if I kicked the door hard enough, it would open up and a bottle would fall out, and I'd have to pick the bottle up and put it back in. You know, just, I was kicking the door to open it, it would come out. Well, I made it through that. I went to St. Vincent's Hospital, and a little Italian girl was working the desk at St. Vincent's at the time. And I walked in and I did one of these. Where's the AA meeting at? And she says, you go right here, turn right, go to the end of the hall, turn right, and keep going. Walked into the AA meeting. Well, I did the ostrich bit. Anybody do the ostrich bit their first couple of meetings? If they don't see my face, they won't see me. So Lenny said he'll see me there. Where the hell was Lenny sitting? Right up front. Right up front, bigger than a gorilla, King Kong. Well, I go up and say, hi, Lenny. And you know what the hell that guy did to me in my first meeting? He gave me to Alcoholics Anonymous because he turned me around and he grabbed my arm and he says, Kevin, I want you to meet Jim. Brink, I want you to meet Jim. Jim, I want you to meet Jim. Yeah. And he made me walk all the way to the back row, shaking hands and meeting these people. He was giving me Alcoholics Anonymous, you people. He was giving me to you, saying, let's save this guy any more misery. Let's knock it off. Let's help this guy. He needs help. Because if he goes back to drinking, he's got self-pity on this side and he's got our remorse on this shoulder. And both of them talking at the same time is going to lead to nothing but real serious trouble. Well, I'll tell you, that first meeting was a sweetie. Who gets up at the podium but this woman in a blue dress and a bell Jackie Kennedy hat? And she does one of these routes. Oh, what a wonderful Christmas we had. Oh, my first sober Christmas. Oh, it was wonderful. I cooked the food, wrapped the gifts, the the family, and that they all came, they ate all the food, they unwrapped the gifts, and they made, oh, it was such a one. You know what? I wanted to punch her right square in the mouth. I mean, if I hadn't have been, if Lenny had to had me back as far as he did, I'd have gone up and nailed her. You know, I didn't have that kind of a Christmas. It was miserable. How quick did Lenny and them know me? Way in the back, it shouldn't be in the back, it should be right up front where everybody can see it, was the literature. So Don, this fellow is sitting next to me at the meeting, and he led the meeting. He grabs me and he goes up and he starts grabbing this literature. You need this. And Lenny goes, whoa, wait a minute, Don, wait a minute, I know this guy. And he takes all the literature out of my hand. He says, you can have that one, you can have that one, and you can have that one. That's enough. Well, I'll tell you what, I was the luckiest guy in the world. First of all, he gave me a pamphlet. What do you know about AA? Nothing. Nothing, you know. I don't know. I heard about it. My wife once said, you and my father belong in AA. And I didn't, you know. In my typical drinking, and that they're one ear, not the other. Then there was another one that was a real kicker. It was a pamphlet that had 15 questions. And he let me have that one. 15 questions, you answered so many in that there. You answered so many more. Yeah, answered so many, grab a chair, because your name's on it. And that's the way it was. Then the third pamphlet was a real kicker. It was, what do you know about alcohol? Seagram Sevens, Four Roses, Kohler's, Pilsner, Budweiser. I remember one time drinking Ballantine Ale, the champagne of beer. What the hell, a damn thing cost almost 40 cents a glass or a bottle. Hell, I couldn't afford that kind of drinking. Well, it was a comic book. It had all those little colored pictures like we see, you know, Captain Marvel and the whole bunch, you know. Well, it was a comic book. Well, that was my literature, first batch of literature. The meeting, I don't know, there was, at that time there, I think we had, 12, 13 meetings in the whole Erie area, counting Meadville, Titusville. And Erie here, you had Monday night, you had two meetings. Tuesday night, you had one. Wednesday night, you had one. Thursday night, you had one. Two, Dobbs Group and Perry Group. But then he gave me another piece of paper about the second or third meeting. It wasn't this real high-tech, fancy stuff we have today. It was a sheet of paper, and it was written like you run off one of those hand crank mimeograph machines, you know, on pages of the paper. That's where the meeting schedule fit on a piece of paper that big. And they said, that's one of your tools for your toolbox. Now, toolbox, I ain't got no toolbox. It's your head. Put it in your head. Put that tools in your head. And that's what it was. It was stupid things that they gave me to put in my head. And of course, the literature. Now I'm tough on literature because I learned and I had the intelligence at that time to know that I didn't have any intelligence. You know, I mean, I could read a sentence and read the next sentence and forget what I read before the sentence I just got done reading, you know. So I had to read and reread and reread. And then they came up, like I said, with all these new funny words. Go to meetings. Don't take the first drink. Listen to your sponsor. I've been sober, and this isn't being bragging, right? I'm just going to tell you, I've been sober a number of years. I still carry a notebook, and I got me one of these new fancy new schedules just came out last week. You know, because the one I had before was 1992. I think they got some new meetings in between there. I think they slipped a few in, you know. But I still carry. I got my notebook. This one here is the thing to write down the phone numbers on. Well, today I feel sorry for the new people. Scott, it's going to be hell. My days, I was lucky. I could look in the phone book and find somebody's name and find the phone number. Everybody's got cell phones now, and they aren't listed anyplace, you know. So you're stuck, you know, unless you can get the guy's cell phone number and write it down right away. You're lost. My days, it was 10 cents, nickel a call on a phone. But it had the phone book in the booth, you know, and you could read it. So to the new people and the young people, my journey has been I've been on a cruise ship probably since about the second year I was sober. It took about that long to start putting nickels and dimes and feet and going through all the legal problems and went through at the time and that. You will have your ups and downs. They have a real fancy term for it now. Your peaks and valleys. You know, wow, you know, wow, peaks and valleys. Hell, I don't know nothing about peaks and valleys. I know a high hill and a low hill. You know, I know a ditch from a highway. But in my day, we didn't have those fancy words. But it's been a cruise ship. I could stand here for 2 hours and just tell you where this fellowship has taken me and my wife. I remarried 2 years after I was in the fellowship. I'm just kidding, Brian. I give him two good reasons not to get married. There's only two in the whole world. My first wife and my second wife. But enjoy yourself. Enjoy yourself. It is a do not start program. It's a fellowship. The fellowship is, we're all going to talk baseball, football, basketball, the Olympics, something or another, knitting or whatever, you know, everything. The program of Alcoholics Anonymous, the use of the word program, is the what my sponsor set up. Now, if you go to a Broadway show or you go